I am an escapee from a communist country. You know, in 1963, I was 4 years old, and my family fled communist Yugoslavia. And communism basically is just the hardcore full application of socialism. So the thing is, it's basically a totalitarian state where the government runs everything. But the bottom line is about communism, the only thing it produces in abundance is oppression and poverty. That's why people try to escape it. But in recent years, in the last 10, 20 years, I think a lot of the youth have been, you know, miseducated on a broad scale. A lot of them don't understand. And what I'm trying to tell the people is, look, I know in your audience, you've got conservatives, moderates, and liberals. And I think all three of these groups should understand that socialism is really the most dangerous economic fraud in human history, and it ushers in the things that we disapprove of.
With the world being so crazy, I have two great gift ideas to help you and your family stay safe. First, the Shockwave Torch. This tiny tool drops a 260-pound thug in 2 seconds. It packs so much power in such a small package, it's scary. Thank God it's got a safety on it. If you want to stay safe in a dangerous world, I promise the Shockwave Torch will help. Next, I want to show you the Light Defender Tactical Laser. It's a palm-sized device that drops attackers by shooting off electromagnetic radiation. It is legal in most of the U.S., but it has been banned inside 4 different states, and countries across the world have been banning it left and right. This might have something to do with the fact the military uses these devices in Afghanistan, Iraq, and other hostile zones to drop terrorists in their tracks. The U.S. Navy calls it the best emergency rescuing device, and it's so powerful it will even start fires with no matches or fuel required. Click the links below to learn more about the Shockwave Torch and the Light Defender Tactical Laser Tool. There would be great gifts for your loved ones and family to keep them safe in this crazy world.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, we're going to talk about the wave of socialism that's coming into our country and how our universities and colleges and high schools are actually making this possible and how it's really a wave of ignorance across our country. I have Paul Lajanovic coming to the show, and he is the writer of all the dummy books, you know, dummy investing or investing in stocks for dummies, all those, that whole series of books. And he escaped communist Yugoslavia with his family, and he is just so adamant that people just don't get why socialism and communism is the extreme version of socialism. He's just very adamant that people just don't understand what they're voting for and what they're trying to march to. They don't understand the practical reality. These feel-good, sound-good do-gooders are not understanding what it means in practical reality and when you start to implement these things and how it really just corrodes freedom and brings in corruption, because human beings are always going to be corrupt. You're going to have greedy, corrupt people. So what system and what kinds of things do you need in place where greedy, corrupt people don't flourish? Well, in socialism, when you have the state running everything, greedy corruption is the state. Instead of the state keeping corruption and keeping the rules, you know, being the referee of keeping things working well, they're the ones participating in corruption and greed. And that's where you see the problems. You know, we have corruption and greed and problems, and we're trying to get rid of that, but we need the country, we need our government to do its role as far as getting rid of the lawlessness and the corruption. So he does a really good job of explaining why we are having all these troubles and why, you know, he talks about how a joke about how, you know, they escape a communist country only to see it start to usher in here, and it's scaring the hell out of them. And this new world order and the one world government, it's just, he talks about all that, and it's really a great interview. And he also sticks around for my patrons and gives you good practical advice on what you should do with the stock market, what you should do to create passive income, things that you can diversify, and just real practical things for people. And you can get that on my Patreon, and I have the link here. So let's get now into my interview with Paul Lajanovic. Paul, thank you so much for joining the program. I'm so glad that you're back.
Oh no, it's a pleasure. It's been too long.
It
Hopefully, the
has.
next time we connect, it'll be a far shorter time span.
We're going to talk about socialism versus communism, and you are the best, or socialism versus free market. And you are the best to have because of your background. Talk about what you've come from so that people understand. I mean, you do all the dummy books, but people see you as an economist, but you come have a background that gives you a different perspective.
No, thank you for mentioning that because I think I'm one of the few financial planners. I've been a CFP since 1985, back when there was only six of them. So I have a history of teaching about investing, economics, etc. But a lot of it was spawned from my earlier days. I am an escapee from a communist country. In 1963, I was 4 years old, and my family fled communist Yugoslavia. And communism basically is just the hardcore full application of socialism. So the thing is, it's basically a totalitarian state where the government runs everything. But the bottom line is about communism, the only thing it produces in abundance is oppression and poverty. That's why people try to escape it. Many people, you hear about the migrant crisis, everybody runs to a capitalist country and everybody runs away from a socialist or communist or fascist country. And so their feet tell you. So we left and I came to America and we were the working poor in the 60s and 70s. And when I saw how my parents struggled, and they were still loads happier, the poor in America were better off than even the quote unquote middle class in a communist country. We were able to eat every day in America, which is a joy and a pleasure. And then in the 70s, I got to thinking, how do I, learn about, here I am in a country that's very prosperous. How do I take advantage of it, even if I don't have a lot of money? And so that ended up helping me create the very first seminar I ever did as a financial advisor, which was the $50 Wealth Builder, how to invest even with small amounts of money. And then a few years later, I said, man, I would love to do a profession where I work with money and help people with their finances and enjoy dealing with people. And then I found out that there was a designation called a certified financial planner. And it was like somebody created a designation just for me. And I earned my designation in 1985, when back then it was a very obscure designation. But my life experiences, I used to say, man, what a shame I was in a communist country. And I look back on it and I go, no, there was a good reason for it. You know what I mean? It helped me learn the big picture. It calibrated me to understand what government policy can or cannot do, how prosperity is born and nurtured, and how poverty and oppression, come into being. And all of this helped me understand and make better calls for things like when recessions are coming. How to watch out for market crashes, et cetera. And so, given all that background of experience helped me be a better writer, speaker, and provide guidance to people, especially through dummies guides and my seminars.
Well, one of the things that you said before we started talking is these midterm elections really set off alarm bells for you. Can you tell me what some of the things are that you experienced or heard that worried you more than any time in the past?
Here's the thing. Years ago, maybe a few decades ago, there was a time when people understood the dangers of socialism. And so therefore, anybody who ran as an outright socialist, had no chance against any semi-decent, opponent out there. So you very rarely saw socialists gain power or traction, some decades ago. But in recent years, in the last 10, 20 years, I think a lot of the youth have been, miseducated on a broad scale. A lot of them don't understand. They don't. There's a lot of people don't understand how the Great Depression started. They forget that wasn't the flaws of the free market. It was because of systemic government policies such as raising taxes to 90%, et cetera. A lot of these things caused it. And so socialism, because a lot of the youth and young adults got their education from a lot of academics, in high schools and colleges and universities, a lot of them were in love with the theory. So they talked about the theory constantly. So people thought, oh, wow, the theory sounded really good. And so all of a sudden, it started gaining large acceptance, especially among the youth. Then when they started becoming voters, all of a sudden they started to become much more enamored of the idea about a socialist state. So what was the alarm bell to me in the recent elections, again, November 2018, for people who hear this later on, was that there was an incredible number of moments when, first of all, you had a socialist, a congresswoman in New York State, getting in, all right? And I hear her talk, and I don't know how to explain how upsetting it was to me that these kind of ideas, which are economic insanity, you know. And then when I find out in Florida, for example, you know, an overt socialist was running for governor of Florida, and he lost by a hair, which was amazing. Whereas 20 years ago, he would have lost in a landslide, and rightly so. And what I'm trying to tell the people is, look, I know in your audience, you've got conservatives, moderates, and liberals. And I think all three of these groups should understand that socialism is really the most dangerous economic fraud in human history, and it ushers in the things that we disapprove of. I spoke to a millennial the other day, and I says, I love social justice, and that's why I hate socialism. And all of a sudden, the look on the face is like, wow, never heard it that way. I believe in social justice. I believe you have civil rights, individual liberty, and prosperity, which free market capitalism produces. Who doesn't want civil rights, individual liberty, and prosperity for the country at large? Well, the point is that once you're on the track towards socialism and it gains a foothold and it becomes an unfettered ideology that's a functioning, you know, a policymaker that has power over the system, now you're talking about you're marching away from civil rights, you're marching away from individual liberty, you're marching away from prosperity and heading in towards using coercion, control, and confiscation. You head toward the end result, which is poverty and oppression, and then the final end result is collapse because it's unsustainable. It's economically unsustainable. It violates the balance of consumption and production, which every economy needs, no matter how modern or how ancient it is. And it always causes an imbalance, and it always causes economic suffering. And always, if it's not mitigated or reversed, it always ends in collapse. So these midterm elections showed me that literally millions of people in our electorate are voting for what sounds good, but they are totally miseducated, is the best way I can put it. They're uninformed. And therefore, we're going to make horrible choices at the ballot box. And we think we're doing something nice, but we're really ushering in, you know, very problematic things that would cause massive problems on a large public scale across the country.
Legally avoid income taxes on windfalls from cryptocurrencies using the only blockchain trust, Immunity Trust, available. This trust will absolutely avoid any taxable event otherwise resulting from using central cryptocurrency exchanges. The special purpose trust is written into your bank account agreement so that you can legally avoid any capital gains taxes, and this works in any country. This blockchain trust is not just some gimmick. John Singleton from Asa Coins have been using it personally for over 20 years, but that same structure is frequently used by the elites to avoid taxation wherever they do business around the world. Click the link below to learn more.
Well, let's talk about theory versus reality. You know, socialism can sound really good, you know, where everybody shares stuff and all this. Talk about some of the theory on socialism and what the reality of that really means.
Oh, I'll give you individual points straight from their platform. For example, the Democratic Socialist of America, again, a well-meaning group, but I can take anybody on a tour through their website and see and show them all the economic insanity that blows up in their face and why it always ends in collapse. Give you one example on their platform. Abolish profit. Abolish profit. Now you're an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur. You got to pay the bills. You got to pay employees. You got to have an incentive to get up in the morning to run your business. And that's the incentive that produces abundance in our economy, products and services that is the envy of the world. That's why people are trying to come here, because they see the abundance. But abundance doesn't happen overnight. It takes hard work, effort, production. But you need profit to reward the efforts of bringing goods and services into being, Sarah. You know, by the way, you know, I have to take a breath once in a while because this is a passionate topic for me, as you could probably understand. I don't have any notes around me. You know what I mean? So the thing is, what would happen? Now, you talk to millennials and kids in college and college professors. They say, oh, well, profit. Oh, that rewards greed. That's horrible. Well, you know what? We need to abolish profit so that everybody is caring and sharing without the profit motive. All right. First of all, what they don't understand is, yes, there is greed in capitalism, but guess what? There's greed in socialism too. In capitalism, there's greed to make a profit. In socialism, there's greed to gain other people's stuff. So when socialism talk about giving away free stuff, that's greed as well. That means you want to take other people's stuff by force, coercion, control, and confiscation, so that you benefit. Whereas in capitalism, greed is a voluntary transaction. You want my money? You got to please me with a good or service that I want before I voluntarily give you even a dollar. So when you abolish profit, you know, you could start when I tell people, well, listen, when you abolish profit, what do you think is going to happen to the economy? What do you think is going to happen? Once you abolish profit, then there's no point in producing. The idea about me working very hard for strangers out there, because that's the thing about capitalism. You make money because you're trying to benefit strangers, whether you like them or not. You know what I mean? I've always told people that the only way socialism works is in the family unit, because it's a small unit. Everyone knows each other. And there is selflessness, and that's beneficial. So I'm a diehard socialist when it comes to a family, no doubt about it. But you can't extend it to nations of millions of strangers, because then nobody is going to benefit anybody. So in profit, what happens with profit then? Once you abolish profit, then there's no point in running a business. Then you know what happens almost overnight? As a matter of fact, I've told people, if I had to destroy an economy almost overnight and the only criteria was to pass a single law, that would be my one law, abolish profit. I would destroy an economy literally overnight. You know, well, in my stock investing seminars, like, you know, I wrote the book Stock Investing for Dummies. And I tell people that profit is the single most important element of a company. No profit, no company. That means you fire people, you know, you close your doors. It doesn't benefit anybody. But I extend to that profit isn't just the single most important element of a successful company. It's the single most important element of a successful nation, national economy. Because how do you pay for public assistance and you pay for firemen and whatever? Public jobs are paid for by private jobs, but private jobs are paid for by profit. So profit actually gives you everything that you see around you. It's the money that is there for the programs that all of us seem to enjoy, whether it's like our local fire department, you know, or that public assistance program emanating from Washington. You need profit because that's what generates tax revenue, which helps to pay for all this. So ask any entrepreneur, what do you think would happen among, say, a group of 1,000 entrepreneurs if you told all of them, listen, keep doing what you're doing, but you cannot make a single penny of profit? And what are they going to start doing? Then they're going to say, well, what's the point of working? Why run a company? You know, there is no point. You know what I mean? So then they start saying, well, I got to let go of people. I got to conserve my cash. You know, and then all of a sudden production collapses.
Okay, so that is so dumb. I mean, I don't even, it's really dumb. But let's think about the, you know, they're starting to talk about socialism, democratic socialism. You know, it's like a watered down socialism. What are they talking about?
Well, first of all, people need to know what the difference is between socialism and democratic socialism. And I'll give you the functional difference. Okay, first of all, socialism, I tell people, is a dangerous economic fraud where you give great speeches about caring and sharing, but then you implement coercion, control, and confiscation, which leads then ultimately, if it's not reversed or mitigated, it leads to poverty and oppression. All right, that's socialism. Democratic socialism is when people vote for what I just described.
There is no difference, really. Okay, well then, let's talk.
Well, Sarah, let me give you an example. I give people two examples of democratic socialists. Adolf Hitler and Hugo Chavez and Maduro, actually. They were all democratically elected, okay? And all those countries' people fled. So, in other words, you can fool people. This is why tyrants love socialism, because you can then get people to voluntarily support you to get in. And once you gain power, then the people are done for in that regard. So democratic socialism is just you're voting for a system that you're clueless about, whereas the other methods, non-democratic, they just foist the system on you without the benefit of the quote-unquote ballot box. So the functional end of it, it doesn't matter. It's like if I fooled you into taking a poison, or if I said, why don't we vote about you taking a poison?
The sad part is they're voting for something because they think it's the right thing. They're just uneducated. I mean, that's the bottom line. But now, we got to this point for a reason. We do have a lot of abuses in our system. A lot of companies are abusing people. And that comes from a dysfunctional free market, or not even a fat, you know, comes from a government controlled market. It's not from a free market. Can you talk about that? Crony capitalism.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I hear people saying, well, Paul, capitalism has greed and corruption. Okay, so my point really is, well, first of all, greed and corruption are not components of any particular system. They're components of humanity. Do you think there's no greed and corruption in a socialist system? There is, in fact, more. See, here's the point.
Well, isn't that, let me interrupt you for a second. Isn't the whole point coming up with a system to manage and balance out the fact that human beings are greedy and we're we're going to do all that stuff? I mean.
Well, here it is. This is where I chime in with you to back your point up 100%. In capitalism, government is the referee. You know, in socialism, government is the participant. So when I say the referee, look, the point is, the whole point about an economic system is there has to be, what did I call it? In three words, mutual voluntary exchange. But in a human system, you're going to have thievery, greed, fraud, corruption. You're going to have these things. But that's the point of government. A free market is not going to function for the benefit of all unless there is unless there's a referee involved, which is the government.
Yeah. Once the government's too involved, then the corruption goes haywire because the government no longer plays the role as a referee and keeping that corruption and its total lawlessness, which is what we're starting to see now.
Right. In our entity, you know it. You and I have met great entrepreneurs and we've met horrible entrepreneurs. The horrible entrepreneurs is if we hate them, we could stop doing business with them. So that's one form of punishment. The second one is that we can complain to the government, which is the point. Government is not intended to be or should not be in a moral sense an element of force. It's supposed to be an element of counterforce. It's supposed to be there against the fraud and things that are happening, you know? So for me, when I hear socialists talk about, well, look at this example where there's greed and corruption in capitalism, right? But greed and corruption in socialism is rewarded and not punished. I mean, people forget, like for example, in Venezuela, Maduro holds the power. In Venezuela, Maduro holds the power. The moment he hated the farmers and he wanted to benefit his cadre of supporters, he would confiscate the farms from the farmers, you know, and then he would give it to his cadre. Now what are you going to do? Who are you going to complain about? When the government itself is an instrument of greed, power, corruption, who do you complain to? Then you do what a lot of people across the globe have been doing in recent years, which is to become a migrant and leave, right? Look at that example. Why do people flee to a capitalist country? Because there's greed and corruption and prosperity. Why do they leave a socialist country? Because there's greed and corruption and poverty and oppression.
We're in a situation, though, now in our country where greed and corruption is actually going through the roof and we're doing nothing about it, it seems like. And that, to me, that's an indication the government's involved and has been involved too heavily. And we don't want it. And that's how socialists are selling to people that we need to have, you know, more socialism. And I'm saying, wait a minute, we need to get the government out of it so they can start implementing their referee role and deal with the corruption and the lawlessness.
No, exactly. It's almost like they don't give a complete statement. They say, you know what, you should be out of the frying pan. But they didn't realize that what they meant was now you should be in the fire, you know? So this is the important differential, you know? The thing is this, me in my classes and my teachings, I always tell people, I want to see people be self-reliant, self-sufficient, and owning their own destiny, you know? And I want them doing it in mutual voluntary exchange. Make a fortune. I cheer you on. I love it when people make $1 million. I love it when they do that. But it could only be done in an economic system that is a free market system, and it has an English common law where people can address abuses and grievances. But in a communist country or a fascist or other forms of statism and socialism, if there's a grievance, what if that grievance and abuse is coming from the government itself? What are you going to do? So the only justice then people have then is to take what few belongings they have and they leave, because there is no redress at that point. So you need the balance. I think government is an important and much desired entity in society, but it's meant to be in a limited sense, you know, to keep a limited sense, because we pay for it. And it should be to those functions which it must do best, which is to use its power of force, you know, to be able to minimize or punish fraud, minimize, you know, or punish other forms of abuses, and otherwise leave people to their own devices to freely transact with themselves. Again, you know, mutual voluntary exchange. It's meant really that to protect this kind of transaction, not to destroy it. And in socialism, you destroy mutual voluntary exchange, which means ultimately you destroy prosperity.
Yeah, and the other role of government in a free market system is to make sure monopolies don't form and things that'll mess up a free market. It's
basically as a counterforce.
Yes,
One entity controls an entire industry, then there's no more a free market at that point. You know, so then people will then complain about the very thing they complained about. Again, a free market is important because you need many buyers and many sellers. So is economic efficiency, and you have, you know, goods and services being produced on a better scale. But if one entity controls everything, they don't have to be efficient anymore. They don't have to respond to consumers. They could be so powerful that they are basically go from being a participant in the market to being a controller, which means from being part of the system to being the system. Then you have abuses that are far-ranging and very destructive, and which has happened throughout history.
Well, and we're having a lot of those abuses now today, which basically is an indication the government's, we've gone too far towards socialism or communism in any one industry. Wall Street, for example, all the abuses that we saw 2008 and probably all, you know, decades before that and after that, is because the government's too involved, the revolving door. I mean, that's the indication, because they never, you know, bring justice to anything.
No, exactly. And, you know, justice, we could all certainly agree on the fact that most just transactions just happen also be voluntary transactions. This is what I talk about, mutual voluntary exchange. It isn't just, economic transactions. It's social, socially just ones as well. When there's coercion involved, that means that there's some force overtaking another person or people. Now you start crossing the line into injustice, which is what people flee and what the government is ultimately supposed to be as a buttress against, not as a purveyor of.
Well, okay, let's talk about the people that really want to bring in a socialist, almost communist environment. You know, a lot of people say that the one world government and everything, they're really for a global communist. You know, in China, the rise of China, China's a very communist country. People are concerned that that's what they want to do in the United States, and we're seeing indications of that everywhere. Can you talk about that?
Exactly. Here's actually a point to something that few people don't get a chance to internalize because they're so emotionally tied to things like nationalism, globalism. These have become emotional terms. Now, for me, I am a nationalist in the sense that I feel that all nations are sovereign. Germany should be Germany. America should be America. You know, and if you hate a country, you can leave a country, etc. Globalism is the idea that basically you have centralized global power with a group of elite bureaucrats, basically, that, you know, that you and I can't vote for, you know. And again, this, you start to seeing back to the differences between capitalism and socialism. Capitalism, free market capitalism, survives and thrives to a great extent because it's decentralized. There is no one entity that controls everything. It's decentralized. Nationalism, which is an extension of that, when you have hundreds of nations across the globe, that's decentralized. No singular entity has total power. You remember what Lord Acton said, right? You know, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. So again, these are points that conservatives, moderates, and liberals should be united against, you know, against this form. And so the thing is, when you leave centralization, and by the way, this is part of what causes a collapse, whether it's an industry or what happened in the Great Depression or what happened through countlessly throughout history, is centralization. When you're talking about a country is totally centralized, that means if there's a collapse, it takes down everything. You know, this is how economic collapses occur, with just centralization. So to me, the idea that we in America should have the ability to vote for what's going on, whether we like it or don't like it, at least we have a voice. And, you know, Canada could be Canada, Mexico could be Mexico, Germany and Ethiopia and all these countries could be their own. And then people should be freely allowed to come and go if they want to, if they hate the country or love the country. But the thing is, once you go the globalist route, That means you're giving a tremendous amount of concentration of power to a small group of people who tend to be unelected bureaucrats. You know, and the idea that we in America, we can vote for the president, we love him, we hate him, we can vote for a new president. This is a power that should be reserved to people at large, regardless of their ethnicity or background. You know, this is true diversity. You can all come together and vote for and vote for against. But the moment you relinquish your sovereignty as a nation, now what? Now policies, economic and otherwise, can be passed by a group of people you and I will never meet or even know. Just that the edict will come to America and say, this is how it has to be. And in globalism, what they will then do is they will take the scale of socialist policies now, you know, where you have to keep on taxing people who are producing and rewarding people who are not producing. And I say this in a functional sense, not in a moral sense, okay? It's just an extension of what happens. You have incentives and disincentives. So once globalists were to take that centralized power, then by a closed-door committee, behind closed doors, they can say, you know what, all the prosperous countries in the world, such as capitalist America, they will have to pay a large tax, and it has to be given to the countries that are not as prosperous. You know, now to me, when I hear about, well, Paul, what are you going to do about poor people in Honduras or these other countries? Well, the point is this, why are they leaving? They're not leaving because it's a flourishing capitalist country. They're leaving because these are basically unfettered socialist or statist policies, which has totally ruined the country. I did an analysis last week. When I hear about the refugee problem in Europe and the refugee problem at the border, and Colombia has a refugee problem from Venezuela, and I thought, where are these people wanting to go and where are they leaving? Because let's face it, who in their right mind would uproot their way of life and travel 1,000 miles to a foreign country? Why would you do that? Why did my family uproot itself from communist Yugoslavia in 1963 and went across an entire ocean to a brave new world called America? Why would you do that? Because the reality you're facing there under the socialist policies are so grievous, you'll take a shot. Why do people swim away from Cuba, you know, in shark-infested waters, or be in a tiny raft and go through for many, many miles of open ocean and risk their lives? Because the reality in a communist and socialist country, you know, again, a fully unfettered communist socialist, is the reality of poverty and oppression, a grinding lifestyle where you're hungry every day. In America, the problem is, gee, what do we have for dinner tonight? I can't decide. Over there, it's like, are we having anything to eat today? You know? So these are realities that we have to deal with. But the idea about the world's poor coming to America, no, because then you can just turn America into the very place, especially with the midterm election results, that they say, well, you got to help everybody. Well, what does it mean? It means that you have to then implement quote-unquote socialist policies, which would destroy the very prosperity, which was a magnet to all these people in the very beginning. My one recommendation to all these countries who are poor and destitute is, you know, why don't you emulate the policies of America? Fine, doesn't have to be a perfect emulation, but put in free market capitalism and you'll see tremendous results where a lot less people want to leave, and the migrant crisis across the globe would diminish drastically.
Well, how do we deal with the fact that people are so clueless on this? I mean, we do have abuses in this country where our corporations and government will go to other countries and abuse them and take their resources and things like that. And then they see us as a free market, you know, asshole, essentially. But that's not what free market is. That's us being lawless and terrible people. How do you, and it's not just us, it's the globalists or the owners using whatever they have to abuse other people. And that's an example of corruption because you have a lot of power. But how did we get into a position where people have learned that socialism is the good thing to do? I mean, all of our universities are teaching this.
Well, see, to me, that's the big question which annoys me. Because first of all, if you're only teaching that socialism is good and you're not allowing a vigorous exchange of ideas, then basically you're essentially indoctrinating folks. You're brainwashing them. And they are, and I find out the people who are most enamored of socialism, you know, are in countries that are not by and large socialist. Like right now, in the last 5-10 years, There are millions of people in Venezuela who woke up and said, holy cow, this is the reality of socialism? They don't get that. Right now, they're enjoying the reality of capitalist prosperity, but they're hearing, you know, it could be better. So they aim for perfection when all they do is the absolute reverse and go backwards instead of forward. The point is, they're all being taught theory in these schools from college professors who would never in their right mind be consistent and leave a capitalist country and go to a socialist country. That's what bothers me the most. American socialists are basically people who, and I'll give some of them the shadow of a doubt, they'd love to see a better world. I understand that. But they want to put in place policies that have been used 1,000 times before, failed 1,000 times before, made people suffer 1,000 times before. But instead of learning those lessons, they go back to the theory constantly. It's almost like the definition of insanity. Do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. But the point is this, I'm 59 years old. If America became socialist tomorrow, I'll die down the road. I'm not worried about me. But I got 2 teenage boys, and all my clients have children, and everybody has children. And if they vote for this, they're going to learn the hard way. It's not a point of like, is socialism good or bad? The point is, do you learn now that it's bad before it's implemented, or you want to learn the hard way? And the bottom line is that a lot of colleges out there, they're in a flourishing society, thank God, because it's a capitalist, free market capitalist society. But all they're talking about is theory. I don't understand why they embrace somebody like Karl Marx, probably the most dangerous crackpot in economic history, because whether he was a nice guy or not is meaningless. The policies are proven to be not just detrimental, but horrific time and time and time again. And I don't want people learning the hard way. They have to understand, but they don't go past the theory. And that's the main reason why so many people are enamored. All they hear about is the theory. And plus, they hear it from people whose self-interest is the power. If I can talk to you and say, look, I want to help you. I want to give you goods and services. We're going to attack those people down there who are wealthy and they live on the hill. But you put me in power and I'll give you stuff. But the only way that can happen is that I get my stuff too. There's 2 types of socialists in this world, Sarah. The ones who really have the stars in their eyes and they go, gee, that sounds like a really great idea. And then there's the people who are in the political sphere who knows it's a crappy, horrendous thing, but it's the easiest way to power. In other words, instead of me telling you, look, your life is hard, but you have to keep on working and producing, and then you'll get the results you want, just like entrepreneurs out there or people who work in regular jobs, they'd rather hear, you know what, your life is tough, and it's because of injustice, and because of this and that and this and that. But you know what? Sign the paper here and let me take over your life. Vote for me right here, and I'll make it all better. But that's impossible. America is prosperous, but once you put in the socialist policies, you first erode and then reverse and then destroy the prosperity. And what do you have left? You have to encourage everybody to be productive. And that's a point of capitalism. Everyone has the incentive. See, there's incentives and disincentives. In capitalism, there's incentive to produce. In socialism, there's incentive to consume. But if everybody's consuming and staying online waiting for their goodies and no one's producing because you've beaten them up, you've taxed them into oblivion, you know, you've abolished their profit, who's left to produce? Prosperity comes from production. And how do you encourage it? You don't encourage it through bureaucracy. You encourage it through the profit of motivation that makes everybody want to produce because that they feel that's the road to success and to their millions or however it is.
Well, I think, yeah, I think what colleges need to do and universities is they need to talk about the abusive behaviors that they're seeing in a capitalist environment and say, okay, let's look at that same abusive environment in a socialist system. And how do those two differ? And actually look at it and show them that these are going to exist in a socialist system just like it's existing here, but what's causing it? I mean, people need to get to the root causes, like you were saying, reality versus theory, because all they're doing is talking about theory versus looking, like you're saying, they're only looking at the rosy side of socialism. They're not looking at the practical side of what's really going on. And if they don't look at the practical side, we're marching very quickly off a cliff. And we do have some negative things that are going on in this country, and it's not because of the free market and capitalism. It's because of abuses of power and greed that aren't being put in check.
And well, you know what? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. That's what I wanted you to make a
point. I did a 57-minute video on YouTube describing the differences between the functional differences between capitalism and socialism. Because this stuff bothers me, because I want this country to prosper. I really do. But you got to do what works. And one of the first things I mentioned, you know, that I said before we go to what we can disagree about, let's talk about what we can agree about. Number one, the first thing we have to agree upon is that, look, there is no such thing as a perfect human system. Never has been, isn't now. It's nowhere to be found. Nowhere, nowhere, nowhere. So then, because you have problems in capitalism, now you have people saying, well, you know, we can make this perfect if you just vote for me to socialist. But now you're talking about a perfect system that is really perfect and only destroying. It has a perfect record of destroying everything you have. You know, you follow. In other words, when I talk about fraud, for example, you know, we've all been conned by some fraud, you know, in our life, right? Oh, I paid $59 for that thing. It doesn't work. And I lost money and whatever. There's always going to be fraud like that. The point is that in socialism is the grandest fraud of all, because it means that it isn't just you losing $59 off a bad consumer transaction. It's now the fraud, whereas you, it isn't just change your pocketbook for $59. It devastates your life and your neighborhood and all the people that you love, and everybody's dying to get the hell out, you know? So people have to understand, you cannot measure capitalism by is it perfect or not, because it's never perfect. Socialism doesn't have perfection either, because the same problems exist. You've got fraud, you've got corruption, you've got mismanagement, and you have it on a wider scale. In other words, you're not decreasing fraud and corruption, you're increasing it, you know, unwittingly, because you've been fooled by the theory. And this is where the real criminality is, without a doubt.
Well, and the universities aren't teaching that. They're just teaching the la-la land, and they're not looking at the truth behind all of that. I mean, what is going on? How did we get to this point where universities are not teaching truth, and they're not looking at, they think that there's do-gooders. They're do-gooders teaching false reality, and they don't understand.
Well, there's a lot of people who are really married to their ideology, and because they are so personally convinced, they're convincing themselves. You know what I mean? And you have an army of these people out there that love their ideology. And the point is that, you know, don't get me wrong. Once in a while, I get to talk with them. And sometimes some of the greatest, you know, purveyors of freedom and free markets and free minds were ex-socialists and ex-communists, because mm-hmm. they understood it. You know what I mean? This is why I love, you know, when you get a chance, one of my favorite people is a guy named Vladimir Jaffe, who's a man on the street. He was an escapee from the Soviet Union, the way I'm an escapee from then communist Yugoslavia. Both of them collapsed, by the way. And it was massive fraud and corruption. And not only that, but it was also massive starvation and hunger. So you get a lot worse, you know, but if you're not careful and try to vote these things out. And for me, I don't know, Sarah, I'm hoping I get the opportunity, along with people like Vladimir Jaffe. You can find him on YouTube. He does great videos where he goes to these protests, and he'll talk to people who are self-described, leftist social justice warriors. And he'll speak to them. Well, why do you like socialism? And it's a great point, counterpoint. Vladimir, you can't fool him. He left the Soviet Union. It destroyed his way of life. He had to flee to America. And he's trying to do his bit to educate people. So the point is this. All I really want is to see that if there's diversity of opinion on college campuses, America will survive. You know, by and large, our prosperous society will survive. But the problem is that on a lot of these venues, and even in grammar schools, a lot of high schools and many colleges, it's overwhelmingly singular opinion on the idea, on the ideology, on the philosophy, on the theory, but not about a vigorous exchange of ideas so people can hear the difference. There's a lot of people on these college campuses who have no idea what socialism is about. We'll take it. But first of all, look at the name itself, socialism. I mean, how could you be against something social? Oh, I love social. Social media, social justice. Why not socialism? But as I tell people, that reality of socialism is that it's the opposite of social justice. But I could only, help one person at a time, get red-pilled, so to speak. Meanwhile, they're now educating, thousands and even millions of high school and college kids in these venues to embrace this ideology and not be more, skeptical thinkers about this. You need skeptical thinkers, but you're not getting it, especially since there's political correctness there. If you speak out against this, you're shut down or kicked out of the classroom. So everybody, it's groupthink, and it's very dangerous.
Well, we're also seeing that in social media, YouTube and Google and all, anybody who thinks like us are being censored. I'm being heavily censored right now by YouTube. And I think it's, to me, that's a scary indication that we're marching very quickly towards that kind of an environment. And people are enamored thinking we're going to this feel good, everybody needs to be treated well and everything. And we do want to treat people well, but we want to do it in a system that makes it fair, and they can actually choose what they want versus being controlled. Because once we move to that, it's going to be a nightmare situation. And well, I feel like we're moving towards that. I mean, the censorship, people don't realize how bad the censorship is right now.
No, exactly. And the year 2018 with the midterm elections and with the things that you've seen, this is all a shot across the bow. You know, if we don't educate people, it'll keep on marching like lemmings to the edge of the cliff, you know. And you know something, as one point, if I can make, I know we're nearing the end. I am about as anti-communist as you can get, you know, which is the hardcore version of socialism. But you know what? In all my years, I have never once made any attempt to censor somebody who was pro-communist, you know. And the thing is that because I prefer engaging in a vigorous exchange of ideas, you know, and then we could learn together. You know what I mean? I want to learn why you love communism, because maybe you want to learn why I hate communism, or why I am an anti-communist, or why I believe in freedom, free markets, free ideas, a free society. These things mean that people can flourish. You can have a diversity of ideas, but the moment you shut these all down, from the social and cultural down to economic, and you have misery. Why? You can avoid it. You just have to learn and have the vigorous exchange of ideas. And that's all I ever tell folks. And this is why I try to reach out to people who love it. Like, for example, some of my favorite friends, you know, like I'm generally like a libertarian slash conservative if I had to cubbyhole myself, you know what I mean? But I talk to my friends who consider them like, you know, liberals, like when, especially from the Vietnam days. I say, look, you should be more against socialism and communism than me. You know, you should be pro-free speech. You know, you join me like Voltaire. And same thing, you know, because I know the moment they shut down a communist, they're going to shut me down. You need the exchange of ideas. You need people saying, oh, I heard the good of this and the bad of this. I heard the good of this and bad of this. I'll make up my own mind. And you have independent thinkers. This is what we need more of, so people can understand the real differences between a free society and an unfree one, a prosperous free market capitalist country, and all the rest who are really just forms of oppression and poverty. And we need to do what? Make sure the human condition is improving and progressing and not diminishing.
Well, what do you think of the New World Order, though, where they really want to usher in this global communism? Does that scare the hell out of you?
It does. I remember being interviewed on a different venue, and I always knew this, but sometimes when other people say it, it hits you between the eyes. And I remember it was Al Coralin, who I loved Al, but he's retired now. And he used to tell me, well, Paul, how does it feel? You escaped communism in Yugoslavia and it came to America, and now it's coming to your shores. What do you think of that? You know, it is like it is a scary point. Now, you mentioned about the New World Order and whatever. You know, it's interesting. When I was a kid, I loved James Bond movies. Maybe you did. I don't know. And I'm trying to make sure my sons watch it too and have fun with it. You know what I mean? Because it was a nice campy kind of thing. But the main theme of every Bond movie was the same. You know, he was opposing that one entity that was there to take over the world. Right? And we fought the Nazis because we said they want to take over the world. We fought the communists because they were going to take over the world. Then there's that Bond, James Bond villain. He or she wants to take over the world. And we said anybody would take over the world, well, they're evil. But now it's almost like the people who want to take over the world has said, you know, just change the verbiage, talk about it a different way, attack nationalism and say, no, we need to be a global community. So now it's almost like you're it's like the siren song where now people are going, oh, yeah, global community, new world order and globalism, which means what? Now you have centralized power. And if that ever was to come to pass, now you're going to have on a global scale what happened on a national scale and failed miserably across many countries, across time, and across our global landscape. And so we need more diversity. Nationalism is about diversity, different nations. You want to be a socialist country? Go ahead. We want to be a capitalist country, and then people can then decide by their feet where they want to go. But once globalism controls everything, that means you can't, there's nowhere to go. Where do you go at that point? You know, then it would be wretched.
Well, we have to learn how to read through these words too and realize that these really sweet sounding great words aren't that great in implementation.
Yeah, I mean, so my favorite question is, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? You know what I mean? Because ultimately, when you start drilling down, sometimes the more you ask questions, you start seeing the light bulb going off in their heads. You know, and it says, oh yeah, that's right. Before I can give you stuff, I have to confiscate it and do this and set up a bureaucracy, diminish freedom, and that's going to cause this and that. And that. It's like, oh, wait, it doesn't sound as good as I thought, you know? Then people start to learn. What do you mean by that? Explain. Don't tell me you want a better world. Tell me, how do you want to get there? Tell me the steps. Be specific, you know? And then we can discuss it along the way, you know, so we could all learn, you know?
Yeah, because we live in a reality. Our world is not theory. Our world is reality. We have to live it. So what does that translate to? Let's get out of theory land and get into what this really translates to.
Because right now in Venezuela, in theory, they should be all rich. But instead, instead, in reality, they're leaving in droves because they want to escape poverty and oppression and they want a better life. So you know what? If you only made that country more prosperous, people wouldn't have to leave and people wouldn't have to suffer long journeys, you know, to places that they're not sure of. Just fix where they're at, because people would love to live where they're at now. Otherwise, why were they there for so long? But it got too insufferable to live there. Why? Because 99 times out of 100 is because the government got too big and destroyed the mechanisms of prosperity. And people then had to leave. They may not understand how it works or why it happened, but they say all they know the reality is, I can't eat, I can't feed my kids, etc. I got to go someplace where they are feeding their kids and they are clothing their kids and they do have a better life and they do have, you know, jobs and they could put food on the table and they could set aside money for a rainy day. But the places they ultimately go to is where? A free market capitalist country. So maybe we should spend time with the rest of the world and say, you know what, instead of seeing your country fall apart and people leaving, take pride in your country and why don't you emulate the things that worked for us? Because, you know, what made America great when you think about it? You know what I mean? It wasn't just because we woke up one day and look, the good Lord sprinkled stardust on us and we have prosperity. It was a lot of work by a lot of people, but the incentives were proper, you know. You had three basic things that worked for us. Number one, free market capitalism, which is the point of our talk, but it was inside a common law framework, you know, headed by the Constitution, which a lot of these countries don't have, a constitutional fold of government, you know? So it wasn't a nation of laws, it was a nation of men, so it was mob rule. And mobs don't tend to just sit there and let's work hard at making things better. Let's just take other people's property, you know? So it was capitalism, Constitution, you know, and Judeo-Christian values as well. You know, we need to love our fellow man and our fellow woman, you know what I mean, in that regard. And that's a different topic altogether. But at the very least, understand what makes economics works and what doesn't. And this is the whole point that I want people to get food on the table, to take care of their family, and not go through all the wretched suffering that people are going through with today.
The game needs to be played with the referee and the rules and laws so that people don't get taken advantage of. And right now, I don't think the government's doing that like they should. I think that's what we're seeing is the corruption. Tell us where we can get your books and everything that you're doing. Sell yourself a little bit, because I know you do all these top-selling books and you have blogs and you teach and everything else.
Oh, I love it. I do national seminars across the country. I love what I do. I've done many books on investing, like, for example, Stock Investing for Dummies. Obviously, I did that one and other ones for those people, because I like to encourage everybody to have a business. I think even if you love your job, get a part-time business, because the more people who know business, the better for the country and the more prosperity for themselves. So I did a book called Micro Entrepreneurship for Dummies. All of my seminars are at my site, and what better name than ravingcapitalist.com. My site is ravingcapitalist.com. And I tell and people ask me, why Raving Capitalist? I tell them, when I start my seminar, I was born in a communist country. That's how you become a Raving Capitalist. So if they go to ravingcapitalist.com, they'll see my posts, you know, and links to video. They can find me on YouTube. And I welcome them. And I hope I can help them prosper, because as a certified financial planner, I help people, you know, do things like retirement planning, become financially independent, help them launch a business so that they can take control of their lives, which I think everybody should. So they can, you know, because that way they're not dependent on other people. It's essentially what? Teach people how to fish, and they'll take care of themselves. That's the best kind of economic justice I can think of, making people self-sufficient. And that's the whole point at ravingcapitalist.com. And thank you for letting me mention that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I recommend. I love talking to you. Will you stick around for my Patreons and do another 5-10 minute segment?
Sure. For you, Sarah, definitely. But on one condition, that we speak again down the road, because I love your
Absolutely.
Program. You're sensational.